Welcome to the BizConnect radio show today, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have two super guests in the studio with us today, and I'm going to just briefly ask them to introduce themselves. To my left,
I'm Layla from Pilgrim's Hospices, and I'm the Corporate and Trust Partnerships Manager.
Fantastic. Layla, lovely to see you. And to my right, brilliant. Andrew, great to see you too. I know you've both been on before, so welcome back to our new studio, obviously. Lovely
it's
to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We're going to be with you for the next hour or so. We've got a fabulous mix of music. You've just been listening to some of it, chosen by Layla. That was Miles Smith and Chapel Rowan. We've got a few tracks chosen by Andrew coming on later in the show as well. But I think what I'd like to do now, Layla, is have a bit more of an in-depth chat with you to understand a little bit more about Pilgrim's Hospices and all the incredibly important work that you do in the local community. So over to you.
So Pilgrim's Hospices is the local adult hospice for East Kent, and we support over 4,100 patients and their families across the area each year. So we're working at the heart of the community to make sure that those who are living with an incurable illness in the last year of their life are able to live well, enjoy the things they've always enjoyed, and get the support that they need.
Wow. So over 4,000 individual patients. So that's quite sort of mind-blowing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. So of all the people that die in East Kent each year, we support about 30% of the people who die in East Kent. So we're a big part of people's lives, big part of the community, and we do that through our three hospice buildings in Canterbury, Ashford and Thanet, but we also have community nursing teams that go into patients' homes and clinics in the community, wherever they're living, nursing homes, into hospitals, that sort of thing.
So that's nearly a third of all end-of-life care that you're providing through the hospices. So without you, what would be the alternative? What would actually happen?
Well, I think it's the type of care that we can give patients and their families. We don't just look at the physical symptoms that someone is experiencing at the end of their life. We look at the whole person, and that's what the difference of hospice care is. So we'll look at what they need in terms of symptom control and pain management. But we'll also look at their emotional needs as well. We'll look at any practical steps that they need to be put in place at home to make sure they can carry on living independently. And we'll look at things like finances. What do they need to be put in place to carry on paying the bills you know, having a bit of an income.
They're really sort of hand-holding through that whole critical time in their life, which must be incredibly stressful and emotional for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably one of the most challenging times of a person's life, of their family's life. And we very much sit down with patients when they're referred to us, look at every aspect of their life and what they want to achieve in the time that they have left. And we'll tailor a care plan to them with what's most important. And it can be anything from the very small things, like we had a patient who, you know, he wanted to watch a final sunset with his daughter. He was staying in one of our hospices, and our nurses made sure that we put the rollers on the bottom of the bed and wheeled him out and they watched that sunset together. Or it can be if, you know, there's a special birthday, but, you know, granny's staying in the hospice, we can have their family members in and our catering team will bake a cake and that sort of thing. So it's the small things which we, you know, seem like the small things but are the big things, but it's also things like finances, the practical support, and looking after the whole family as well.
And I've seen also in some instances, I think, I don't know if you do this at the hospices, but, you know, where you might bring animals in for people to stroke animals that they've always wanted to do.
Yeah, so we have pat dogs which come into each of our hospice sites every week, and they're our furry volunteers, I guess you could call them. We have Winston, who's at Canterbury, and he'll come in, for example, every Monday with his owner. And he'll come down onto the ward, and it's just pet therapy. And, you know, we'll spend time with patients, and it's a really great way to relax patients and staff. Staff love it as well. Yeah.
And I guess it's about, you know, ultimately giving people a more dignified end of life.
I think it's that one-on-one care that we can provide at hospices. Mm. And really understanding who they are as people. And, you know, it's people who are from 18 upwards, which a lot of people don't realise that it's not just people in their 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
Plus, we had a young gentleman who was with us a couple of months ago who was 33. And one thing that his friend said, who was his primary carer, was that we really understood the fact that he was a younger patient and that made all the difference to him in his final couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you would think with that huge responsibility that you shoulder, that you would be incredibly well funded by the public sector in terms of taxpayer money, for example. But that isn't necessarily the case, is it?
No, so we are primarily funded through voluntary donations. So we have to raise about 80% of our income through voluntary donations, which is incredible when you think the community around us, primarily in East Kent, are responsible for keeping our doors open. And it's a huge achievement that individuals, community groups, businesses, trusts have helped us to make that possible. And that's the same with all hospices across the UK. We are very much funded by our communities, which makes us at the heart of the communities we serve.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to put some kind of numbers around that, I believe you have to raise over £17 million in total annually to keep the three hospices going and providing the services that you do, outpatient services as well. And only around about 14 million of that comes from from the government, is that correct?
No, 40 million comes from people in the community.
So only about 3 million of that comes from that, which is that kind of 20% that you were talking about, that kind of 20-80 kind of split.
Yeah, absolutely.
So £14 million you need to raise.
Yeah, which, you know, can be really challenging because, you know, individuals, businesses, they face their own challenges, particularly when cost of living, you know, comes to the forefront. And sometimes charity isn't, you know, isn't people's priorities. But we have lots of ways that people can engage with us to help raise that money. And each year we work very hard to make that figure.
Well, let's talk about some of that, because we both have a very good friend, Peter, or Piotr, who lives in Ashford. Peter, I don't know if you're tuned in today, but Peter runs his own chartered structural engineering consultancy based here in Ashford. And a couple of weeks ago, he took part in your Pilgrim's Walk, didn't he?
Yeah,
so tell us a little bit about that. How many people got involved? How much money did you raise?
So we had 700 walkers.
Wow.
Take part in the Pilgrim's Way Challenge, which is our flagship hiking event, which goes from Dover to Wye with three different routes, 25, 35, 55K.
And 55K, so that's over 30 miles.
Yes, and it was on the hottest day of the year so far, on 21st of June, and Peter did an incredible job. I was really pleased to see him en route at about 8:30 going into Mountain Street, so he still had quite a way to go at that stage, but he did a great job, and that's a really great event for a mixture of people to get involved with. We had lots of businesses do it as a team thing. We have individuals who've lost someone at Pilgrims who do it to raise money in memory of their loved one. And we just do it because it's fun as well. So there's a whole mix of people that take part, and we have lots of rest stops along the way to feed people. And
you had some strawberries on the menu, is that right? Another
good
friend of ours, Steve, and his company, GVE Commercial Solutions, that chartered or quantity surveyors, they took part, didn't they?
They did. There was 11 of them, and I was pleased to see them on route as well. They enjoyed the strawberry tea rest off in Chartham Hatch. So you'll get fed very well in our events, which is nice.
How much did you raise again in total?
It's over 180,000.
Wow.
Yeah, the figure is rising because of gift aid is still coming on, but it's the most successful Pilgrims event we've ever done.
What an incredible.
And we're not
effort.
Quite sure how it's happened, but it has. Yeah. So we're absolutely thrilled because it really is a massive team effort with all our volunteers on the day.
Well, a lot of it is down to your hard work, Layla. So, you know, tell us a little bit about, you know, what you actually do in terms of engaging with, you know, businesses, for example, to actually get them, you know, participating in your fundraising.
Yeah, so I primarily look after all of our business partnerships, and that can be anything from a business who has a charity of the year scheme to a sole trader who wants to support a charity but isn't quite sure how to. So I very much sit down with businesses and find out what they want to achieve from working with a charity. And that could be anything from increasing, you know, their audience reach, brand recognition, to, you know, doing activities to boost staff morale. And then we tailor a partnership with each other to suit them. It is very much a partnership. It's not what we can get out of them solely. It's actually how they can benefit from working with us.
That's a really good point, actually, isn't it? Because a lot of organisations today are very heavily invested in something called social value.
Yeah.
Terms of, you know, making sure that staff, you know, buy into a kind of common purpose, if you like, within the business. And that's a great way to do it, isn't it?
It's a great way to do it. And particularly if you've got two or three people who are sort of form a charity committee, that works really well. And it means that everyone stays focused with what they want to achieve from supporting a charity. Mm-hmm. And also it's a great way, you know, to raise awareness of what we do at the hospice. You might not need to use our services ever, but you might know someone who does.
Yeah.
But also have a bereavement aftercare service as well. And one thing we will be running is grief awareness in the workplace, so we can support businesses and how to support, you know,
so
people going through grief.
There's a wider kind of value add agenda there, isn't there? I mean, that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah, there's lots that you can...
Supporting people to come to terms with their grief, you know,
yeah,
when their loved one
absolutely.
Passes away. I mean, that must be an incredibly difficult time for people at work.
I think, you know, we're very British, aren't we? And we kind of sometimes, we don't really know how to talk to someone who's going through a bereavement, particularly in the workplace. If someone comes back from a period of time off from being bereaved, they're still going through that grief. And it's how we can give colleagues the confidence to welcome them back without feeling awkward. Or,
and for them to cope with their day-to-day workload, which... You know, must feel like an incredible
absolutely
burden.
Yeah, and I think it's about engaging with, you know, the HR teams, the directors, and giving them the confidence to implement that into their workplace.
Amazing. I want to talk a little bit about golf, because I'm a golfer or a golfing bore, and we had just had the Open Championship yesterday, of course, finished.
Yeah.
But because I know that's an important way for you to raise money as well.
Yeah.
And you have a golf day
coming
up in September.
It was like you planned that. It was like you planned it. So the golf day is our corporate event, and we've been running it for 5 years this year, and we raised $17,500 last year at Canterbury Golf Club. We had 26 teams, so it's grown each year, which is great to see. But that's a great way for your business to get involved with having fun on the course, but also coming together with other businesses to raise money. So we've got 22 teams this year. I'm hoping we get the 26 again, because I don't want to go below last year. So 4 more spaces, 4 more teams. So if you do want to come along, you can have a look on our website. But it's also a great way for businesses to sponsor the event as well, or donate prizes. So there's always a way for you to get involved on that day.
And for non-golfers who just want to come along and participate, you do have a sort of mini putting competition
we do.
As well, don't you, on the
yes.
putting green there. So.
This is so much fun. I'm not a golfer. I like organising the golf days, but I'm not a golfer. So I kind of found that there's so many people in the business community who never get to come along to these golf days because they're not golfers. So we have Putt for Pilgrims on the morning from 10:30 till 12:30 at Canterbury Golf Club, and we do a very relaxed, informal 6-hole putting comp, and there's prizes to be won, lots of open networking, and it's really good fun.
Yeah, so you don't have to be there all day. You can just rock up, enjoy the putting comp,
and
help raise some money.
Yeah.
And then go back to work.
And then go back to work.
Or not,
because it's on Friday, so.
Brilliant. So just remind us, when is that?
So it's Friday the 12th of September.
12th of September, okay, brilliant. Now, I know you've got some more local fundraising events coming up as well. Tell us about the summer fair that you've got coming up at Sandy Acres.
Yeah, so our community fundraising teams work really hard in the community organising events. And one of those events is the Ashford Summer Fair at Sandy Acres this weekend. that's a great opportunity to come along, families to spend the day together while supporting pilgrims. There's always lots of activities for the children, which helps with the summer holiday dilemma that many parents find themselves in. And they do such a great job. They raise sort of, you know, nearly 20,000 each year from that event. Lots of great refreshments, games, tombolas, that sort of thing.
And our very own Sam is getting involved with that.
She is, although she did say that the past events in the last few weeks, they've all rained.
Oh no.
So hopefully she doesn't bring that with her.
It's not going to rain. It's definitely not going to rain.
There's going to be some, but it's a good event.
I think what we should do is give a shout out for your website now, because all of these events are obviously on there as well. And there's other events like skydiving and wing walking that you've got coming up.
Yeah.
Later in the year as well.
Yeah, there's a whole range of events to see everyone, whether it's people who want to do a real challenge like flying out of a plane or wing walking to hiking to cycling or just enjoying us with their feet firmly on the ground at one of our fairs.
I saw you've got Everest Base Camp trek.
Yeah,
up
we
there
have.
For next year. Is it March?
It's March.
Yeah.
It's towards the end of March. That's the first international trek that we've organised in-house. That's been really popular, but we have got some spaces left.
Okay.
So for those who kind of want to take their fundraising challenges to the next level, then take
a look
at our website.
A whole new level.
A whole new level, literally.
6,000 metres plus. Okay. So what is your website address, please?
So it's pilgrimshospices.org. And if you go to the events page, you'll see all of our challenges.
Brilliant.
And there will be something that suits everyone.
Yeah. And of course, people or, you know, organisations listening can connect with you directly as well on LinkedIn, probably.
On LinkedIn is a great way to connect.
Yeah.
Or I'm often out networking. Yeah. So
and you'll pop along and have a chat about
absolutely.
How you can work with them to actually support pilgrims and all the work that you do.
Yes. Definitely.
Amazing. Good. Fantastic. Layla, thank you so much for now. I think what we're going to do is we're going to play a little bit more music, and then when we come back, we're going to have a chat with Andrew waiting patiently in the wings and learn more about Barclays Eagle Lab. Please tell us a little bit about Barclays Eagle Labs. Obviously, people are familiar with the Barclays brand as a high street bank, but they may not be familiar with Eagle Lab. So give us a flavour for what you're all about.
Essentially, we work right from very early stage companies who are sort of in that ideation phase, right the way up to scale-ups. We work right across the UK doing that, basically.
Fantastic. And you're a network, aren't you? I'm based at the Barclays Eagle Lab in Discovery Park in Sandwich, for example, but you're actually a network of Eagle Labs, aren't you, across the country?
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're closing on 44 labs.
Wow.
It's grown steadily enough that I keep forgetting the actual number of how many we've got these days. But we've got them, some of those sort of repurposed branches. Mm-hmm. Other ones are partnerships with universities and local authorities. We've got one on a farm in Lincoln, which I know Discovery Park's great on the Science Park, but that one always seems to take the crown for the most unique Eagle Lab.
Uh-huh.
And then we have obviously our whole national proposition that sits across that with things like mentoring, dedicated growth programs, access to kind of investor networks and all sorts.
So there's three kind of core themes that sit behind Eagle Labs: connect, innovate and grow. So just give us a kind of brief synopsis on what each of those mean.
Yeah, so Connect, as it says on the tin, is about making sure that startup founders are able to network and connect with people who might not be in the same industry as them, but are at the same sort of part of their business journey, and are just looking for someone to talk to, maybe work alongside. We've had people sort of realize that they're different sides of the same coin and actually just go into business together and scale that way. And then on the innovate side, obviously we're looking for companies that are looking to innovate within their sector. The people would use that word disrupt within their sector, but I don't know. I think innovate sounds a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And then grow, obviously we're looking to take those companies right from sort of pre-funding, pre-revenue, right up to scaling, sort of Series A, Series B.
Yeah. And the thing I love about all of this is you don't have to be a Barclays business customer to take advantage of these programs. They really are open to all businesses that need that kind of that level of business support, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, as you mentioned, you don't have to bank with us, and all of the support that I've mentioned so far is completely free of charge. The co-working is the only sort of caveat to that. At Discovery Park, you still got to pay your rent, but all of the services I've mentioned before, completely free of charge.
Well, you mentioned that. So let's talk a little bit about your role, which is ecosystem manager. What does that actually involve? Because I know you are physically on site a lot of the time at Discovery Park. So tell us a little bit about your role.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it's a very, very wide-ranging role. Like, it can be one day you're putting on an event, sort of laying out food and things like that, picking up our delicious pastries for the sustainability breakfast at some ungodly hour. And then others, you're sitting down one-to-one with businesses, actually going through what their plan is, kind of whether it's offering them sort of reassurance, sometimes just an agony aunt, basically, kind of helping them understand what it is that they're doing, and then signposting a lot of the support that's available from the wider Barclays ecosystem as well.
Yeah, and I think the other key benefit, certainly from my point of view, is just being around like-minded, you know, business founders, you know, directors of companies who have that kind of entrepreneurial mindset. And, you know, invariably, once you start talking, you know, there's an opportunity for you to help them and vice versa. And it is a very sort of organic kind of growth process from that point of view as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's a cliche, but for a reason, about the whole kind of coffee machine, water cooler conversations. Yeah. Like, sometimes it just starts with how's your weekend been? And then half an hour later, you're kind of properly digging into the nuts and bolts of something or someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you are actually based at Discovery Park. We mentioned at the Barclays Eagle Lab there. Invariably, there's a lot of focus on the kind of the life science sector. And there's business support programs that have been created around that. So one of which is called Discovery Park. So Discovery Spark. Give us a flavor for what that's all about, please, Andrew.
Yeah, so Discovery Spark, it's a growth program that we host down at Discovery Park. It's an unintentional tongue twister, that one, sometimes.
Which I just fell into.
Yeah. It wouldn't be the first time someone's got those two mixed up. So it's early stage companies. We've got resources and support available over several days. They're sort of spaced out in pairs of days. We've got in-person sessions, clinics with business growth experts. Sort of biotech, medtech, diagnostic, that kind of stuff, available to companies up to £1 million in equity. Mm-hmm. And we basically look to help the founders understand exactly how they got to where they are now and then what the opportunities are to grow beyond that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as part of that, we've got a sort of specialist network within the Discovery Spark ecosystem that provides that sort of very industry focused and theme focused as well. As you mentioned, it's a cardiology and heart health focused one this time around.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're interested, if you're, you know, potentially, in the life sciences sector, you know, as a startup and you're listening today, you might want to get in touch with, Discovery Park themselves directly, or via Andrew, to find out more information about the Spark program. I do think, it's still open actually for cardiology applicants at the moment, so if you know somebody in that sector or in that space that might be interested, then do get in touch. And I think we had Kirsty Budden on, who is the head of marketing at Discovery Park, a couple of weeks ago as well, so she'd be a good contact for you there as well. And I know you ran an event a couple of weeks ago up at HQ. That's the other nice thing, isn't it? You tap into the sort of the wider Barclays kind of offering in terms of being able to facilitate all of that networking, all of those connections. There was an event called Health Elevate, I think, up at Canary Wharf a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so it was really, really, really good fun, that one. So that brought together people from healthcare, life sciences across the whole of the UK. Mm-hmm. And we were able to have a whole sort of Discovery Park sort of exhibition corner, essentially, where we invited startups who are based in Discovery Park and who are kind of alumni of programs and things like that to come and showcase what they're doing to several hundred industry professionals, fellow sort of startup founders and things like that. So it's always good to kind of get that national connectivity going, even though we're sort of down on the corner of Kent. It's still
absolutely
we operate very much nationally.
But it clearly isn't just life science sector focus. I know you do a lot of support around scaling up tech businesses, for example, as well. And you do more kind of general funding readiness support and programs. So tell us a little bit about those two specifically, because I think they're live at the moment as well, aren't they, in terms of, taking applications for those.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the kind of more earlier stage businesses who are looking to kind of navigate the funding landscape and fund their growth, we've got our funding readiness program. Mm-hmm. Applications close on the 29th of August. Mm-hmm. And then for companies that are a bit further into that journey, focus more on the sort of tech-based companies, we've got our scale-up program, which is a curated three-month hybrid program. Basically designed to help them tackle those challenges of going from starting up into the scaling portion mm-hmm. of their business journey. Mm-hmm. And that's until the 10th of August. That's open for applications.
Okay. And I think, the other key message is clearly, keep your eyes on the Eagle Labs, website, because, these programs are refreshed, continually, and there's new programs coming online all the time. And some of them are actually, quite niche, and you think, oh gosh, there's some very specific, business support out there. So, always worth keeping a look at that. Give us a shout out, Andrew, for the website, if you can, please. Eagle Labs.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you head to labs.uk.barclays, or you can drop me an email at andrew.pledger@barclays.com. I'm also on LinkedIn as well, if you want to come and say hi there.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think the other key thing that you mentioned, is the kind of the co-working space as well. So, if people want to come and have a look round and maybe play some table tennis or shoot some pool, because they're, both of those are on offer.
Yeah, definitely come along. We're all very, very keen table tennis players. I think some people, when they're walking past, think that that's like their full-time job is basically playing table tennis, but I promise we do get loads of work done as well.
So perhaps you're, a micro business owner tuned in today and you're thinking, I really need to get out of the home office, in particular at the moment, with kids having just broken up for the summer holidays, then, do give it some serious consideration and pop along, and Andrew will give you the tour.
Yeah, absolutely. And more than happy to let people come and work for the day, as well as a sort of free trial, just to see how they get on with being part of the community.
Fantastic. So what's the best way to get in touch with you, Andrew? Is that, I know you're not big on social media and LinkedIn necessarily, but you do have an email address, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. So andrew.pledger@barclays.com. Drop me a line and, always willing to see what we can do to help.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you so much for all of that. Really useful information in terms of the business support that's out there and available through Eagle Labs. I think what we're going to do now, we've got a little bit more music. We've got one of Andrew's tracks that we're going to play again. We've got Fleetwood Mac, The Chain. And then when we come back, we're going to bring Layla and Andrew together just to kind of close the show. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after this.
Kent Biz Connects on Radio Ashford with Martin White.
Welcome back to the final part of the BizConnect radio show today. Thank you so much for staying with us. It's been a lovely show talking to Layla from Pilgrim's Hospices, all about the fabulous work that they do in the community, and also Andrew Pledger from Barclays Eagle Labs. And I want to stay with the kind of the fundraising theme, if we can, Andrew, for the last part of the show, because I know you're about to get on your bicycle and cycle an awful long way to raise money. So tell us all about that. What are you up to?
Yeah, so on the 3rd of August, I'll be starting in London and cycling all the way up to Edinburgh and then all the way back down, going over the Pennines twice along the way. I've got to do that in 125 hours.
Okay.
Along with just shy of 2,000 other people. So, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. But
so that's 5 days.
Yeah, 5 days.
Rough maths.
I'm aiming at around about 110, 115 hours is where my goal is going
to
be.
So is it all downhill on the way back, or is it the other way around? Is it sort of downhill on the way and then uphill on the way back? Or
there's a nice flat bit at the start and the finish, which I think is going to be nice. I'm just concentrating on that for now. But there's an awful lot of both uphill and downhill.
Okay. So, I mean, just doing it, as a bike ride, over a couple of weeks, maybe for a summer holiday would be one thing. But you've got this added kind of time pressure, because presumably people want to go home at some point and kind of get back to their lives. So all of the organisation that goes on and everything else, that's why they set a time limit, presumably.
Yeah, exactly. So there's 21 stop-off points called controls, and they're all run by volunteers. There's just shy of 1,000 people kind of making the whole thing happen, basically. And, yeah, as you imagine, over 5 days, basically waiting for riders to trickle through, it's a case of we only open it up just as the fastest possible effort would be arriving, and then the slowest cutoff last starter arrives each time. But there's been a few years where people have been quite far behind, and they've the odd volunteer kind of hangs around with a bottle of water or something just to make sure they're all right.
So where do you sort of, I mean, where do you sleep? You know, I mean, do you just sort of grab a bit of grass verge somewhere, or yeah, are you organized? You check into hotels so that you know each day you've got to do, you know, I don't know, 200 plus miles, which is the reality, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's definitely nothing as luxurious as a hotel. I think the danger there is once you're checked into a hotel, it's convincing yourself to get back on the bike after like 3 days. You just think, nah, screw this. No. But a lot of the controls are in places like village halls, sort of school gyms and things like that. So the accommodation is basically a sort of scratchy moving blanket and a bit of floor for you to lay on, essentially.
And do they feed you, or are you expected to sort of make your own kind of provisions on that level? Or
yeah, so at each control, they do have like a kind of big pot of chili or shepherd's pie and things like that. So you've got like nice high calorie, sort of high carb stuff that you can just shovel down and then onto the next one.
That is incredible.
45 kilometers on average between controls. So there's a bit of finding stuff on your way as well.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us who you're raising money for, and how can we get involved, and how can we sponsor you?
Yeah, so I'm raising money for the RNLI, which I'm sure most people know, fantastic volunteer-led organisation looking to save lives at sea. The URL for my sponsorship thing is a bit too long probably to read on the radio, but I'll get you to put it in the show notes.
All right, brilliant. Or just get in touch with Andrew directly.
Yes, I've posted about on LinkedIn, so if you find me on there, then you can find the link that way.
Fantastic. Well, we wish you all the best with that. I'm just thinking about the Tour de France that is kind of ongoing at the moment, and the kind of the superhuman effort involved in all of that. So we wish you all the best.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Layla.
Oh, I'm tired even just listening about
Goodness me. It's crazy, isn't it? On the par with your sort of, not your golf day, but certainly your trek to Everest base camp, I think.
Well, our big cycle challenge is, which has been going for 15 years, that's 1,000 cyclists around, you know, 125 miles. And I think that's just taken it to the next level. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's just over twice that per day.
Absolutely.
Yeah, twice that per day. 5 days.
What a fantastic event, though. Well done for doing that.
Nice. Thanks.
So just final thoughts from you, Layla, in terms of organisations getting involved with Pilgrims Hospices, maybe as their, you know, charity partner, for example.
Yeah, so I would just urge any business to have a think about how they can support a charity of their choice, whether it is, you know, traditional means through Charity of the Year, or whether you are maybe like a sole trader and don't quite know where to start. There's always a way that you can get involved. You know, the possibilities are endless, and we'll kind of be here every step of the way to see you through it.
And I like that you know, idea that you mentioned of you know, it's a two-way street, you know.
Absolutely,
you raising money for us, we want to work with you to actually make more of that.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and that's something I really focus on, really getting to know the businesses and what they want to achieve from working with the charity, and how we can help them achieve their goals as well. Yeah. So
it's incredibly empowering both ways, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it makes it more fun as well for both of us, you know, for the business and the charity. Yeah. And that's when really great partnerships do come about. Yeah,
fantastic. Great. Well, thank you both so much for being with us today on the show. We do have to say goodbye. We will be back in another 2 weeks' time with two more super guests, but we wish everybody a lovely summer holiday. It's brightening up as I speak. I can see blue sky out there, so that's good. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. So bye for now.
Thanks for having us.